Welcome to Lending Forward, a podcast where we're lending every bit of what we know to our listeners. From real conversations and lessons learned deep within the industry to education and forward thinking. Together, we're Lending Forward. And as always, don't forget to subscribe to our channels and connect with us on www.atlanticbay.com. Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group, LLC, NMLS number 72043, NMLSConsumerAccess.org is an equal opportunity lender located at 600 Lynn Haven Parkway, Suite 203, Virginia Beach, Virginia, 23452. Welcome to another episode of Lending Forward. I'm your host, Taylor Ellard, and joining me today is the one and only Barry Habib. Welcome, Barry.
Hey, Taylor. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for coming back.
My pleasure.
It's good to see you. Well, we get if you work for Atlantic Bay or if you're a guest at the Economic Forecast at Atlantic Bay, we heard quite a few things from you, and it's you always pack such insight, and we're lucky to be able to be on the receiving end of this, especially when we're talking with buyers and trying to calm their woes and just tell them, hey, we've got this. And your presentations you provide from MBS Highway are so helpful, and we can't be any more thankful than we are. But you mentioned quite a few things in the Economic Forecast for 2023 last month. And a couple of those dates were March 10th, March 14th, May 10th. Tell us a little bit, now that we're seeing those true results, tell us what indicators you've heard through this and then how we can kind of see everything shake out.
So March 10th and March 14th, both were very meaningful. So March 10th, we were hopeful that we'd get jobs numbers that were more indicative of where we are. And we did get that. And that's why we saw a pretty big rally. Now, today we got inflation numbers that we weren't expecting a lot of progress, but we thought we'd get a little progress. That's exactly what we got, was a little progress today. So prices are better than they have been. Rates are better than they have been. But we've also got some inflation numbers in front of us, and mortgage rates are going to follow inflation, that we have to get through that will be released in April. That's going to be for the month of March. So that's going to be released April 12th. I think there's going to be a little bit of heartburn there. I don't think we're going to make as much progress on inflation. But then the date we had told you in advance was May 10th. That's where we see the beginning of a consistent improvement. So I think we could get down into the fives, maybe towards 5%, but not on May 10th. That's the beginning. So sometime over the summer months, as we begin our journey there, starting May 10th, where we start to see really good, meaningful moves lower in inflation with that report, I think that you'll begin to see mortgage-backed securities and interest rates on mortgages respond favorably. I also think the economy probably will begin to show more and more weakness, just as we're starting to see. And the jobs numbers, like we saw last Friday, more indicative of a jobs picture that is not as strong as so many people make it out to be. And we've got more less full-time workers today than we had back in May of 2022. All the gains has come in part-time workers. It's also come really in leisure and hospitality, which that's been the big growth engine. But that's just the makeup from all the jobs in that sector that were lost. I mean, I could show you some charts there to kind of really depict this. And let's start first of all with that leisure and hospitality one. So I think this is very meaningful, because you could see leisure and hospitality jobs, and then COVID. Now, obviously, these poor folks, they all were in a position where, you know, they were closed down and very few were working. So huge job losses. But then you could see how they have come back since COVID. This is March of 2020, over the past couple of years. But we've put them almost all back. So as we've seen these huge job gains, they've predominantly come from this sector. I mean, this sector lost like 10 million jobs almost, right? So it was an incredible amount of jobs lost. But now we are nearing the end of what I think has been a, you know, really impressive run back. You know, I don't think that this chart's going to keep the job numbers growing at the levels they've been growing. So this is running out of gas. And the first cracks in that were, although we showed in February another 105,000 job gains here, if you look at something called the JOLTS report, which stands for job openings and labor turnover, this is essentially job postings, you know, help wanted, right? So leisure and hospitality in the most recent job openings report declined by almost 200,000 less job openings. So that is telling you what this chart is indicating. The chart's indicating that we're running out of gas here, And the latest job postings are indicative of that. So I don't think we're going to be in a position where we will be seeing that engine of growth in jobs continue. And as the job numbers start to subside, you know, there'll be more evidence that the economy is not as strong, inflation and wage pressures ease, and you probably see interest rates improve off of that.
So the leisure and hospitality piece of it, those jobs specifically, why those? Can you kind of elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, it's pretty obvious when we had COVID. I mean, you know, restaurants were kind of shut down. You couldn't go out to eat anymore, right? So, and then they've started to come back, but they've come back slowly. But yet it's been a steady improvement. Now, here we are, you know, I can't believe it's 3 years since COVID, right? So since it finally first struck, but in the past 3 years, those, you know, whatever it was, 8, 9, 10 million jobs have almost all come back. So now as we've come back to a relatively normal state, the growth factor of it, you know, you've been seeing job gain, really wasn't true gains. It was just catching up to what was lost from COVID. So what was wiped out in a month has taken 3 years to come back, but that has been an engine of job growth. So, you know, when you see the president come on and, you know, I don't want to get political here, but say, oh, we created 12,000 jobs. You know, let's be real here. A lot of that was just put back from what was there, but we've reached the stage where we've pretty much almost put them all back. Leisure and hospitality lost the most. They put back the most. But if you start to say, okay, now we're back to where we were, are you seeing a gazillion more restaurant openings more than those that have closed? Have you seen, you know, a gazillion more hotels more than they've closed open? I mean, there are some, but it's certainly not at the level where we're adding million, you know, 3 or 4 million jobs a year. You know, we're not doing that anymore, right? So what we have to start thinking about is this engine of job growth will probably start to level off and stop giving us the job growth that we had been seeing from there, which means overall job growth drops. And the evidence is in the early state, right? What happens? If you want to hire somebody, first thing you do is you put an ad, I want to hire you, right? You know, these postings in Indeed and ZipRecruiter, and, you know, this is what you find in like the similar to the JOLTS report, but now those are not there anymore, which is telling you that, okay, we lost all these workers. We pretty much hired them all back. Now I'm fully staffed. So you're not going to get those job gains.
Right. Makes sense. So for loan officers and mortgage bankers who are listening to this, when they go to their agents and they say, hey, you know, your agents are looking for education on what's happening with the market, where is the rates going? What types of conversations and pieces of education should they be bringing them?
So what really everybody misses, and it's crazy because, you know, you listen to all the analysts and even and the Fed certainly has no clue on this, is that inflation will come down. They've already done more than enough. In fact, they've done so much, they've overdone it so much that it breaks. So we have to remember that the mortgage rates are going to follow inflation. And we had significant inflation because the Fed and our government both overstimulated us. Stimulus was just, what's inflation is too many dollars chasing too few goods. So when you inject trillions of dollars and you keep interest rates at zero, meaning that it's very easy to borrow, which injects more money into the economy, the money supply increases radically. And too many dollars chasing too few goods causes inflation. It's, you know, it's very early. Now, initially, we probably had to take some of these actions and steps. I get it. But the government went too far and they created stimulus that we didn't need. And our Fed went too far because they should have paid attention to the warning signs as inflation was rising, the economy was snapping back quickly. What they should have done was stopped quantitative easing, which is buying mortgage-backed securities and treasuries, and they should have started easing their zero policy of interest rates at zero, and maybe at 0.25% hike or another 0.25% hike, similar to what Alan Greenspan did when he started what he called measured pace. You know, hey, we're going to kind of ease into this. But they've gone on this maniacal path because what they did was they blew it. They said, oh, don't worry about inflation. It's transitory. So they got it so wrong there. Jerome Powell's tombstone probably would have read, maybe will read, the worst Fed chair in our history, the embarrassment of the Fed, right? He's a human being. He doesn't want that. So he's so hell-bent on fixing the problem that he was highly culpable along with his Fed members in creating, which was now giving us this nasty inflation, giving us these higher mortgage rates, creating the problem that he created, And what he's trying to do is, with reckless abandon, now saying, oh my gosh, I have to fix that, so I have to kill inflation. But he's killing so many other things. At its core, it's a Fed that doesn't understand it. They didn't understand it when inflation was rising, because if you listen to the Fed, you will always hear these two disgusting words. We're data dependent. That is evidence that the Fed is completely clueless, because data lags. You can't have forward-looking data. Data is only what happened. It is equivalent of driving down a highway at a high speed, but only watching the rearview mirror. It is a very dangerous thing, and that's why we crash. That's why we have boom cycles. That's why we have bust cycles. It's because a reckless Fed will break things, just like they broke the banking system. What happened with SVB was about to happen with First Republic. This is all based upon what the Fed did. And it's really critical here, Taylor, to understand that if they would only look at things that are causing inflation, they would see inflation coming down. I'm going to show you very quickly the evidence of that. So bear with me a moment as I'm going to, with you here, I'm going to take a look at a couple of slides to try and show you the main evidence of this. And I think this will do it here. So the way that we look at inflation, 43% of the core inflation reading of CPI, Consumer Price Index, are shelter costs. It is the main driver of where inflation is going, 43% of it. Now, in real time, you could see what has happened in the past year or so to shelter costs. This is rents and owner's equivalent rent. When the Fed looks at shelter and housing, it does not look at home prices. It does not look at mortgage rates. It does not look at the amount of down payment. It doesn't look at any of that. It looks at housing is a service. And I agree with the methodology, because people could have different credit ratings. It's not indicative of inflation, different down payments. Some people's a cash buyer. You can't look at these things. What you have to look at is housing as a service. So they look at it a couple of different ways. How much am I paying for rent? Mm-hmm. Or if I own a home, how much could I rent that home out for? And they measure the change, and that's how they come out with it. So you could see in the past year or so, the shelter costs have decelerated rather dramatically. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that it measures real time along with the data for the past 12 months. And it counts what happened 12 months ago the same as it counts what is happening today. What's worse is, imagine you were surveyed 11 or 12 months ago and you actually signed your lease 6 or 8 months before that. You could see there's quite the lag. So when we got the CPI report today, real-time shelters coming in up 3% year over year. But the way it's reported in CPI is it's up 8.1%, because it's capturing a lot of this. Look, it's not at the 18% that it was here, but it is still capturing this rise. The lag hasn't caught up. I mean, if you take a look here at the last lag that we had, where we had a big drop, we only started to see that big drop happen about 14 months later. Mm-hmm. So we should, maybe in the next report or two, see this begin to roll over and cause less pressure. And the drop was pretty significant, pretty quick. So I think you'll start to see this roll over. Now, you can do a mathematical calculation on this. The difference between these new two numbers is 5.1%. And if the Fed would only take out a calculator and say, the way it's reported versus real time is 5.1%, it's a 43% weighting, the CPI is headed towards 3.3%, even though it's showing 5.5%. We're going to get here. We've done enough. You know what this is like? This is like, imagine, heaven forbid, somebody's ill and they're in bed. They're feeling miserable. You go and you give them some medicine. Take these pills. Take a spoonful of this. You check on them 5 minutes later. What's wrong with you? You're not back to normal? Give me some more. Here's some more pills. You come back 5 minutes. What? You're not healthy? Here's some more pills. You're going to kill the patient. That's what the Fed is doing. These lags take time. They've done enough. If they were just, you know, first thing in the morning, if you get in the shower, you turn on the water, it's cold. If you put it to the extreme, extreme hot, the hottest setting ever, okay, sure, it'll warm up, but then you're going to burn yourself. The idea is not to do that. We're all smart enough to know you don't put it on the hottest level. You put it to where you think it should eventually get to. Be patient for 30 or 60 seconds, and then it'll be reasonable. Then you could tweak it a little bit. But the Fed's going extreme hot, extreme cold, extreme hot, extreme cold. That's what they're doing.
Very well explained. And I think there's a lot of us listening that are just like, all right, let's get to May. We can do this. Let them realize, okay, yeah, the lag, show up, you know, that type of thing. Well, let's kind of, so once inflation hits and it's like, okay, this is it. We're tapped out. We can't do it anymore. What is next for us on the latter half of the year? If you could predict something, rate specific, but okay, go ahead.
No, I'll get rate specific with you. I think we're going to be in the fives over the summer. Right. I think we'll start our journey there on a consistent basis on May 10th. I think we get a little heartburn before that, but we'll get there and things will start to become better and better and better. Now, what does that mean? Well, we got a little taste of it in January where rates got to about 6%. And what were you seeing? Multiple offers on homes. The culprit there is that there's just no inventory out there. Inventory is very scarce and it's actually gone down since then. So when you take an environment, let's call it environment, 5.5% mortgage rate, instead of 6.75 or 6.5%, wherever it is now, you drop 1%. Now, not all these people will enter the market, but you now make 5 million more people more eligible to buy. Okay. You're not going to need 5 million, but even a very small fraction of that, you introduce that many more buyers into the environment. And those who just have been sidelined, now it's a different story. But you're also going to get move up buyers because right now, if I've got 3%, well, 3% going to 6.5%, but maybe at 5.5, I'll start thinking about it. But then there's another element to it, of course, Taylor, and that is that a lot of people have debt. In fact, credit card debt is at its all-time high. I've got debt, I've got car loans. Those rates have gone up. But you know what? I've got a ton of equity in my home. So I will use a home equity line of credit. Home equity lines of credit a year ago were at 3%. Now they're at 8 going to 9. So now if I have a home equity loan that's like at 9, with a 3%, maybe my blended rate is like 4.25. It's not so bad to go to 5.25 or 5.5.
Right.
So you're going to see move up buyers as well. There will be a lot more activity. So as a mortgage originator, it is a tough time. There's no doubt about that. And I can certainly empathize. I know, but there are better times that are not that, you know, not that much of a waiting period to start to see. This summer is going to be better. More activity, more refinances, lower rates, or purchases, you're going to see that.
I love it. Well, since you're on Lending Forward, this will be my final question. You know, I'm going to ask it. How are you lending forward this year?
How am I lending forward this year?
How are you lending forward? However you perceive that. It's always out of the blue. And people are like, well, however you've interpreted that question, you answer with what your gut says.
Okay. So what I am trying to do is maybe not just lend, but give insights, give knowledge, give expertise, and try and shed light on areas that unfortunately are fed, unfortunately the media, and unfortunately some so-called economists or, you know, people that are supposed to know are completely in the dark about. You know, these are important times. They create important opportunities. I think that if you were trying to forecast the bottom in prices, let's see what has happened in housing. We've seen home values go up 121 months consecutively through July of 2022. Think about that. Without a break, one month after another, as if it was on a staircase, prices rose all along the way. So many people for the last 8 years saying there's a housing bubble, home values are in trouble. You've heard it on every media station. You know, the band leader, that's been Diana Olick for 8 years trying to scare people, don't buy, rent. So that's not going to change. What has happened, though, is that since rates have taken this dramatic rise, we've seen buyers hibernate, and now home values, according to the two best sources out there, have declined a little bit. How much? Here's the exact numbers. According to Case-Shiller, which is highly respected, measures all homes, 2.7% from their peak. Okay, so this is not year over year. Year over year was still up 6%, but from their peak, they've come in a little bit, 2.7. Also in the season where they typically come down a little bit. Then you have FHFA, which measures all homes with a conforming loan amount, from their peak, 1% decline. Now, I know you might be in a neighborhood, you might be in a market where you've seen maybe gains instead of losses, or you might see more extreme losses. This is a national average, right? Now, if in this environment where the amount of active listings are half of normal, what if you now see interest rates follow inflation over the summer? That influx of buyers is going to put us in a position where we will see appreciation. When do you want to take advantage of that? I don't know when the exact date when that turn comes. I don't think anybody's good enough to know that. So let's assume we're going to miss it. Where do we miss it? Well, here's what most people do. Most people wait for the bottom wait till things start to get better, and then say, okay, now it's all clear, I'll jump in. But prices are already starting to rise. Sellers are already feeling more confident. There's already multiple offers and more competition and less to choose from. You don't want to miss it after the all clear. Now's the time to miss the bottom. You want to get in now because the seller's more fearful. The media is playing into it. There's, although scarce, still more inventory, less competition, and you can negotiate. You can buy a home now with a $10,000 discount, perhaps, maybe more, because that's 2% on $500,000. And then once rates come down, you could sit back and get appreciation. How much appreciation? Look, I'm saying in the next year, I'm going to be very, very modest and say 3%. But I want to give you a last thing to think about. The last bottom occurred in early 2012, where we'd seen home prices decline and then they turned up. In the year after the bottom, home values went up 8%. I'm only saying 3, but an important distinction. The total amount of inventory at that time was 2.4 million homes in 2012. We have more people in our population today, and inventory, it's not 2.4 million, it's 980,000. And of that 980,000, 40% are already under contract. So you tell me, you know, what's going to happen when rates come down, when inflation comes down.
It's going to be very interesting. And we appreciate all your insight on this. And your daily updates are something that I look forward to every day. So we appreciate you, Barry. Thank you for being on Lending Forward.
Thanks, Taylor. You have a great day.
Thanks again for listening to the Lending Forward podcast powered by Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group. Don't forget to tune in next week and make sure you subscribe to our channel. Remember, we all play a part in Lending Forward. So go lend something forward today.